just a minute. Robin Hood steals money from my pocket, forcing me to hurt the public. And they love him for it?
Yes.
That's it. Cancel the kitchen scraps for lepers and orphans. No more merciful beheadings. And call off Christmas.
After returning home from the Crusades, Robin of Locksley and his band of merry men fight back against the evil Sheriff of Nottingham. As we continue our Robin Hood trilogy, we talk about archers that cut their hand for no reason, who can be swashbucklers, and how this movie is Ewok-esque. Then we find out if Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, stands the test of time.
James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glut. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hello and welcome to the Test of Time podcast. I am James Brief, and if you heard us last week, we talked about Robin Hood. This week we're talking about Robin Hood. Next week we're talking about Robin Hood, and talking with me about Robin Hood for a long time is my podcast partner, Alan Noah.
Yeah, I'm like Robin Hood and you're like my little John.
Well, I mean, I think I might be like a centimeter taller than you. My name starts with a J, so I could be Little John.
That's the main reason why I think you should be my Little John. I don't know which one of us is better at archery. I assume I'm terrible at it.
I mean, I haven't done archery since like day camp, you know, a long time ago. And I think I once got in the outer bullseye, you know, once ever.
All right. Well, then you're better than me at archery. I don't think I ever hit a target.
You know, we're talking about Robin Hood and archery, and when I told my father that we were doing some Robin Hood films, he mentioned, oh, you must be doing the Errol Flynn film from the 1930s, and, you know, we did discuss reviewing this film, but, you know, the thing is, neither of us just really care about Robin Hood enough, you know, to do such an in-depth study.
I mean, look, a trilogy makes sense. A quadrilogy feels like we're stretching it.
And, you know, Robin Hood is the kind of story that there have been two Robin Hood films this decade. There was a Russell Crowe film probably about 10 years ago. And right. Then like a year or two ago, there was a modern take on it with Taron Egerton, you know, the guy that was Elton John and in the Kingsman films, and Jamie Foxx. But I think it took place in like modern times. I think it got like close to 0% in Rotten Tomatoes. But it's the kind of story that is you don't have to buy the rights to it. So that's why everyone kind of does this story over and over. And they do King Arthur all the time. And because these legends, you don't have to pay anyone for it. So there really is an unlimited number of Robin Hood films and productions and books and comics. But we picked three that from our lifetime were significant. You know, the first one last week was before our lifetime, but it was a Disney film. So I knew about it.
Sure.
This movie, which is titled Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, this take on the Robin Hood legend, this actually begins in the Third Crusade. And in 1195, Robin of Locksley, played by Kevin Costner, he breaks out of a Jerusalem prison. And along with a Muslim named Azim, played by Morgan Freeman, they make it back to England. And when he's back in England, Robin finds that his father has been killed and his family's land was taken by the vicious Sheriff of Nottingham, played by Alan Rickman. Robin and Azim join forces with outlaws Little John, Will Scarlet, and a bunch of other people of Sherwood Forest, and they decide to fight back. But the sheriff invades the forest, burns down the outlaw village, and threatens to kill a group of prisoners, unless the beautiful maid Marian agrees to marry him. In the end, it's up to Robin and his friends to stop the sheriff, save the prisoners, and rescue Marian.
Last week, you mentioned that you had seen this movie before. I hadn't, but did a lot of other people see it in the theater?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You were pretty much the guy that didn't see it because the film opened on June 14th, 1991. It had a $48 million budget. So, you know, $50 million was a lot of money for a movie back then. It opened at number one with $25.6 million. So it made half of its budget back on opening weekend. And it booted from number one, a former Test of Time favorite. It's the only acting role of Yeardley Smith that you can think of in a motion picture.
Oh, City Slickers.
Yeah, just remind everyone who Yeardley Smith is, by the way.
She's the voice of Lisa Simpson. You always hear her, but you don't ever really see her.
Exactly. So it bumped City Slickers, and this movie, it made gangbusters. It made $165 million domestically and $390 million worldwide. It was number two in 1991. Do you know what film was number one? We reviewed this film, 1991.
Give me a hint.
It is one of those films that was just a huge summer blockbuster and everybody loved it, including our friend Billy Belitsky.
Oh, Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Right, right, right.
One thing I do remember from this movie was the song, the Bryan Adams song, open parentheses, everything I do, close parentheses, I do it for you. I remember that song was everywhere on the radio. It was just a huge hit. In my research today, I saw that it is one of like the top selling singles of all time still. It sold more than 15 million copies. It was nominated for an Academy Award. It lost that year to Beauty and the Beast, but I remember hearing that song just constantly.
I just want the listeners to know that everything Alan just said was a complete lie. The song is Everything I Do, open parentheses, I do it for you, close parentheses.
Are you sure about that?
I think. We are not going on with this podcast until we find this out.
No,
Everything I do, I do it for you. We're both Googling who could do this quicker. And
I'm right.
Well, damn it. IMDb was wrong then because I copied that straight out of IMDb. Okay.
But in thinking about it, I think that for me, part of the reason why I wasn't interested in this movie was because of that song. And, you know, that song is a power ballad. And I think I just assumed that this movie was sort of a romantic tale of Robin Hood. And it's not really. It's definitely more of like an action flick.
Oh, yeah. There is an arm chopped off in the first 10 seconds of the film. So, you know, this film takes place in the Third Crusade. So if you're not aware of your crusade history, Al, the Christians took Jerusalem from 1099 until 1187. And then Saladin, he's this, legendary hero in the Arab world. Like, he took Jerusalem back in 1187. So this is the next crusade, what's called the Third Crusade. This is 1195, which did not go very well for the Christians. And if there's somewhere you don't want to be, it's you don't want to be in a prisoner of war torture camp in 1195. And that's where we find the movie opening. And this is real hardcore torture. You see people just like chained over anvils and they're chopping off limbs and, you know, screams of agony. It's a very effective opening.
It's definitely brutal, and our hero, Robin Hood, volunteers to have his hand cut off because they're going to cut off some other guy's hand, and it's his friend Peter, and Robin says that Peter is too weak. If they take his hand, he'll die, so he volunteers to have his hand cut off instead, but the sadistic guy in charge says, just cut off both of their hands, and when they go to chop off Robin's hand, he says, this is English courage. And he pulls his hand back at the last second and fights back. And he's able to knock out the guy who is going to cut off his hand. And it's this big action set piece moment. It is a little bit funny, though, when he says, this is English courage, because he says it with a very American accent. And he has an English accent like maybe two or three times in the course of this movie, but definitely not in this scene when he says, this is English courage. And it definitely just kind of colors that line, which could have been like a really cool action hero moment, just because you're like, wait, that's English courage? You're supposed to be English?
Yeah, it's a thing about this film that Kevin Costner, who is a good actor, but you're saying there were a couple times he sounds British. I thought he played this straight up American Kevin Costner accent. I think he sounds exactly like he does in Dances with Wolves. And, you know, it's just one of those, that's what it is, folks. Just go with it.
There's a couple of scenes where you can kind of hear a little bit of it. But yeah, basically he was worried about his British accent. And the director, Kevin Reynolds, said, yeah, don't even worry about it. Just talk how you want to talk. And that was one of the things that the two of them fought about during this movie. But yeah, basically for most of the movie, he just doesn't bother. But anyway, while Robin is escaping, he frees a Muslim who is being held in this torture camp as well. For whatever reason, his fellow Englishman, he can't break the chains quickly enough, but this guy, he can rescue him easily, and he says he knows a secret way out. And this is Azeem, played by Morgan Freeman. And I did not realize that Morgan Freeman was in this movie, but I was happy to see him. And as soon as they get out of the prison, Robin's friend Peter is killed, and Robin and Azeem are going to figure out their way out of the city. Robin is basically like, cool, we're good, we got out of the prison, you can go your own way now. But Azeem says that he owes Robin a life debt, and he's going to stick around with him. And then, like, the next time we see them, they're back in England. So the long journey from Jerusalem to England is entirely glossed over. All you need to know is they make it back.
And right when they get off their rowboat and, you know, Robin is kissing the ground, he's so happy to be back. And you can imagine any soldier, you know, especially coming back from such a gruesome war, he's so happy to be home. There's this weird part where right as Azeem gets off the boat, someone tries to kill Azeem, but he manages to fight him off. And Robin just kind of shrugs and goes, "Hey, I had to try." And they both just kind of shrug and then just go, "Okay, don't try that again, though." And to be fair, Robin doesn't do it again, but that was a little mean of him.
I didn't interpret it that he was trying to kill him. I thought he was trying to, like, get him back on the boat to send him home because, hey, you helped me out enough, now go home. You know, this life debt is paid. I didn't interpret it that he was trying to kill him.
Oh, okay. That might make more sense because it seemed completely out of character. All right. So the two of them, they decide to travel together because Azeem is, you know, he's going to stick with him for freeing him from the prison. And they happen to come across this kid who is fleeing from these, like, armed authority figures. He's in a tree and they're like, "We're going to kill you. We're going to kill you." So Robin, he takes an arrow and shoots it in their direction and is basically like, "Hey, you know, get the fuck away." And they're like, "This is the sheriff's land." And he's like, no, this is my land. And so they're like, "Ah, young Robin of Loxley, welcome home." There's a great, like, villain, whoever this, like, henchman guy is. He's got a great, like, Christopher Lambert, "Welcome home."
So this character is a guy named Guy, and he's the Sheriff of Nottingham's cousin. And I looked up this actor because I was just curious if I'd seen him in other things. His name is Michael Wincott. The only thing that I'm confident that I've seen him in is The Crow. He played Top Dollar, one of the gang members. And he's been in a couple other movies that I recognize the names, but not a lot. And I think he's a really fun villain in this movie. I mean, the character is despicable, but the actor just, like, he seems to really enjoy the role. And I just like this guy. I liked watching him on screen.
I agree. I thought he was a lot of fun. Robin is kind of a little hero here, saves the kid, and the kid just runs away. And, you know, Robin and Azeem ride over to the Loxley estate, and Dad is dead. He's been hanged because they said he was a devil worshiper. He finds out that all of his lands has been seized, and the only one that survived the massacre at his home is the trusted, I guess he's some kind of, like, master of the house or something. Like, he's the Alfred, you know, to Bruce Wayne, but he's been blinded by, he says it's the sheriff's men. They came, said Dad was a devil worshiper, and then they blinded him.
Right. And we see that happen earlier in the movie. We see when Lord Loxley is ambushed at his castle. It was one of those things where Lord Loxley does not need to die. Basically, Lord Loxley like goes out of the castle. He's been tricked. He thinks that he's going to be helping someone. And then he like barely opens the castle gate and sees all of these bad guys wearing masks led by the evil Sheriff of Nottingham. And immediately Lord Loxley is like, you. And Lord Loxley could very easily just go right back into the castle, raise the gate, and fight off these 12 guys, and he just doesn't. I guess it's like honor or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the scene, it serves no purpose. I think he should have just come home to just find his dad dead or something. It's a cool scene in that they're all dressed almost like clansmen and they have like torches. So it is a very like menacing scene. But I find this whole devil worshipping subplot to be strange. But there's something in the scene when Robin finds his father's dead. He does something that I hate in films is he makes a vow that, you know, I'll avenge you, father. And he makes a blood vow, but he does the thing where he puts a fist around his knife and slices his palm. And now you'll cut all your tendons and you will not be a great archery guy, archer. But the reason this is a film trope is because in like the 30s, 40s, 50s, that was a great, easy place to hide a blood packet. So you could like take the fake knife, do that, and then you squeeze the ketchup packet that's in your hand. But it is, it's very cringy when people do it. Not because of just the inaccuracy, but why would just anyone do that? It's such a stupid character thing to do. And he's like a physical action hero.
Right, right. I mean, maybe just like prick the tip of your finger. Even that kind of makes me squirm because I don't like pain for no reason. But I mean, that would make more sense, I guess. But let's talk about the Sheriff of Nottingham, who's played by Alan Rickman. And I say this as an Alan. Alan Rickman's one of the top three, maybe top five Alans of all time. I mean, he is just great, especially when playing a villain. And he is in full villain mode in this movie. He chews the scenery. He is so vile, but you enjoy watching him. He's just one of those guys you love to hate, very much in the vein of Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Oh, and 100% when I saw this film in 1991, I was like, oh, it's Hans Gruber. Because, I mean, that's who Alan Rickman was until he was Snape. I would say to most people, he was Hans Gruber. And he's fantastic in this film. And it's interesting even that the sheriff is the main villain because John, he's the main villain in the Robin Hood that we saw last week. But in this film, there is absolutely no Prince John. It's all run by the Sheriff of Nottingham guy. And I read that Alan Rickman apparently turned the role down twice until he was told that he could just do whatever he wants with the character. And there's a lot of like little additions to this character that are, you know, subtle, but make him a very twisted individual. I mean, he's kind of a casual rapist. I mean, he's making plans with his henchmen while he's like casually fondling some poor peasant woman that's forced to go up to his room while he's, you know, making plans of who to kill and what villages to burn. And there's one scene where he's just casually walking down the hallway, talking to another henchman about some unrelated plot. And then he points to some woman and he goes, you, 10 o'clock. And then walks another paces, you, be in my room at 10:15. And he walks a few paces, turns back and goes, and bring a friend.
He's rapey. Right out of the gate, he is a rapey villain. And later on in the movie, we actually see him attempting a rape. And we'll get to that later. But yeah, certainly from the beginning, you get that he is that kind of guy. He also has this witch friend, advisor, something, who is helping him with this plot. After the sheriff finds out that Robin of Loxley is still alive, he goes to consult with this witch, and she like does this weird ritual with these stones and blood and spit. And the very first like stone I noticed when she like tosses him into the blood is a skull and crossbones, but apparently she doesn't notice that because she points to like one first about the painted man, which refers to Azim, because I guess that's what they called black people. And then there's another stone that means King Richard is coming back. And then the third one, she like finally sees a skull and is like, ah, oh no. It's like, how did you not see that right there? It's like the most obvious thing. And there's only three stones in this plate of blood.
Yeah, this whole scene is kind of weird. This is the part where the film takes a turn into the supernatural. She's correctly predicting things. So this is a woman who's an actual mystic and reminded me a lot of the mystic in Willow, if you remember her. Just like, yeah, you know, with prophecies. And she's entirely unneeded in this film. It's a weird character. She does have a heterochromia, which is when you have two different colored eyeballs. She has one blue and one brown eye. I think like my dog Nyack.
Wasn't that your sister's dog?
He was the Brief family dog, but you're correct. He was Joanna's dog.
And I mean, she has like a lazy eye, right? It's more than just one's a different color.
Yeah, and I found out that there's a totally deleted scene that was filmed and cut, and it's on some editions of the film, on some special edition DVDs. It turns out that the witch, she had been spying on the sheriff, and then he finds out about it, and then there's a whole subplot that it turns out that the witch is actually the sheriff's mother. In a weird way, she's not his birth mother, but the real person that was supposed to be the next sheriff of Nottingham was killed, or she had him killed, and then the witch raised this sheriff as his own and manipulated him his whole life into being the evil guy that he is so that she could control the throne, essentially. It's a weird subplot, and I think that was probably good that they eliminated that, but they probably couldn't eliminate her character entirely, so I just don't think that this dip into the supernatural is necessary.
Yeah, it is bizarre. After Robin finds out that he has no castle to go to, he goes to visit his friend Peter's sister. And Peter was his friend from the Crusades who was killed. And before Peter died, he made Robin vow to protect his sister. And the sister is Maid Marian. And when we first meet Maid Marian, she is a badass. Like, she has her handmaiden pretend to be Maid Marian, and then the real Maid Marian like attacks Robin and is really good with a dagger, I think she's using to fight him. Robin only barely escapes. And Marian says that she knew Robin from when they were kids and he was always a spoiled brat and that she doesn't need protecting from him. Eventually, Guy, the sheriff's cousin, comes to Marian's castle and Robin and Azim and Duncan, they flee. They have nowhere to go. They end up in Sherwood Forest. And you're like about 40 minutes or so into the movie before Robin Hood goes into Sherwood Forest. And that's where he meets Little John, or at first John Little. And then after Robin beats him up, he calls him Little John. And I guess that nickname sticks for whatever reason.
And here we also meet Christian Slater's character, Will Scarlet. He's just this guy who's in Little John's posse and for whatever reason really does not like this Robin guy.
Also, Will Scarlet does not have an English accent.
That's right. That's right. But Robin, he takes to these people very well, and the people take to him well. And then they decide to just start doing a little, they start a little hustle where they decide that they're going to rob from the rich. And do they specifically feed it to the poor, give it to the poor, or do they consider themselves the poor? It's not really made clear, is it?
Well, that's a really good question, James, because it sort of at some point seems like all of the poor people live inside Sherwood Forest and they're hidden from the sheriff. But then at other points, it's like some of these people live near the forest, but like in a village where the bad guys know where they are. So it's not entirely clear like the geography and who lives where and why some people live out in the open and some people live in the cover of the forest. It is a little bit confusing. But however they define their people, you know, the poor, they rob from the rich and they give to the poor. And there's like this sort of montage of these robberies and also Robin Hood having these forest dwellers like build a village, sort of like the Ewok village in Return of the Jedi, you know, where they've got like tree houses and like rope bridges everywhere. Also, he is training these people to fight because, you know, they're simple farmers, but Robin Hood is teaching them how to shoot arrows and, you know, fight with swords and make all of these booby traps. Really is very Ewok-esque.
Oh, it's incredibly Ewok-esque. And during the montage of robberies, there comes a point when Guy, the sheriff's cousin, "You has this voice," he confronts them again, and Robin decides to not kill the cousin. And then the sheriff does something that I absolutely hate in films. I hate when bad guys murder their own henchmen, especially like, you know, the henchmen that would have helped them, but they kind of want to show the troops that this is what happens when you fail me. There's probably much easier ways to punish people and show that you don't want to be messed with than killing one of your top people.
Well, and it's also his cousin. I mean, I saw that coming. Like the first time Guy encounters Robin Hood, Robin Hood beats him. Then it happens again. And there's only one thing that can happen to him at that point, and that is for the Sheriff of Nottingham to kill him. And the convoy where Guy failed for that second time, where he ends up getting killed afterwards, is when he is trying to protect Friar Tuck, who's a drunken friar, and Robin and his band steal all of his ale as well as all of his gold. And it's a very different Friar Tuck from last week's movie, the Disney movie. This Friar Tuck is a real scumbag at first, an alcoholic who doesn't care about helping people until Robin Hood basically shows him the error of his ways. Eventually, he then becomes a good guy. But I kind of like this take on Friar Tuck.
Yeah, I like this guy too. I don't see him that he was like a bad guy at first. I just think he's probably one of these people that has heard that the forest people are probably a bunch of thieves and they're a bunch of like bad people. You know, he kind of is rightfully scared of them. I mean, to be fair, they did rob him at knife point. So he does try to escape from him, which is his right to do. When he realizes that they're not going to kill him, yeah, maybe they're not terrible people. And this kind of all turns around when the sheriff gets word that there's all these peasants that are, they're growing. He's growing in popularity. It doesn't matter how much you raise the ransom on his head. No one's going to turn in Robin of Locksley, who they're now calling Robin of the Hood, to scare people. But one thing that's really bothering the sheriff is that the big story here is that King Richard, the guy that's in the Crusades, the sheriff wants to have all of King Richard's enemies unite with him to take over his throne. So the sheriff has sent out a lot of bribery money to all these nearby kingdoms, and Robin keeps intercepting this money. I guess some of it got through, and the sheriff was able to bribe a bunch of Celtic men. These guys look like the extras in Braveheart, guys that have long beards and they have clubs, and they're just gonna, you know, go after you. And there's a pretty cool battle that happens in the forest.
I was definitely getting Braveheart vibes as well. And yeah, it's this epic fight. At one point, it really seems like the Merry Men of Sherwood Forest are winning. But then the Celts start shooting these flaming arrows into the forest and everything starts burning down. And there's this dramatic rescue for Little John's wife, Fanny, who had just given birth. And Little John is able to rescue Fanny and rescue the baby. But one of his other sons, who is the little kid we saw in the beginning of the movie, he's taken by the sheriff, as are a bunch of other leaders of the Merry Men. And this leads to the Sheriff of Nottingham to come up with a proposal, literally.
A proposal is correct, Alan. She says, I'll spare their lives if Maid Marian marries me. And we find out that Robin Hood, he survived the battle in the forest. And Will Scarlet, Christian Slater's character, he still hates Robin. And it turns out that the reason he's always hated him is because he is Robin Hood's half-brother. It was unbeknownst to Robin, because when Robin Hood's mother died, his father remarried, and Robin Hood was like, he was a bitchy little, angsty little kid, and said, get this woman and her baby away from here. And it turns out that the baby was Will Scarlet. So he's always hated Robin of Locksley. But Robin is like, oh man, I got a brother. That's awesome.
They definitely give you hints that Will does not like Robin right from the beginning. And the story that Robin caused their father to leave Will's mother. Yeah, okay, I get why Will would resent Robin for that. Also, though, they completely gloss over the fact that earlier in the movie, Robin shoots Will with an arrow through the hand. And it's just kind of like nothing. Like, it's not a big deal at all. Like, Will Scarlet doesn't mind. No one else is really that perturbed by it. I would think an arrow through the hand would really hurt. But it doesn't really seem to bother anyone.
No, in this universe, witches are real, and you can slice your hand with a knife or get an arrow shot through your hand. And hands don't feel pain in this universe.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
That's why in the beginning, when they're like, we're going to chop off your hand, Robin was like, yawn.
Right. I guess that is a weird theme of this movie. So Robin finds out about this marriage, and the only thing he can do is, you know, show up to stop it. And this is the moment that Robin and his merry men have been training for. Azim is making all of this gunpowder, and he's going to use it to blow up the galleys where they're going to hang the 10 prisoners or however many it is. And the plan starts going astray when they find that Will Scarlet is in the crowd, and one of the sheriff's goons puts his head on the barrel, and they're going to cut off his head instead of hanging him. So then Azim can't shoot the gunpowder barrel with a flaming arrow, because obviously that would kill Will.
Right. And, you know, the whole thing about this is that gunpowder doesn't exist in Europe at this time. Gunpowder doesn't come for another 100, 200 years. I think it's in China at this point. But they just put it at Azim, who's this mysterious Moor who just says, the secret is in the mysterious black powder that I'm making. And you just go, okay, so he's got gunpowder, because this film in 1195 can't have explosions if you don't have gunpowder or something. So how do we get explosions here? Just say the Muslim guy brought them the secret of gunpowder 100 years early. And despite its enormous success in liberating the kingdom of King Richard, no one will decide to find out how to replicate this.
It is odd, but there's this big, huge battle, and Robin and Azim are able to catapult themselves over a wall, which is insane, but fine, whatever.
As long as they land on a huge thing of hay, which they did, they got very lucky that they shot themselves over a stone wall and landed perfectly in a barrel of hay.
Right. And it basically comes down to the showdown of Robin versus the Sheriff of Nottingham. And also to the side, it's Azim fighting the witch, and also the good Friar Tuck confronting the sheriff's evil pastor, and the battle outside between the good guys and the bad guys. Pretty much everyone in the square is a good guy now, because Azim has brought them to his side with his rousing words. And before Robin breaks into the room where the Sheriff of Nottingham is, the sheriff is trying to very quickly marry Maid Marian and then rape her, because the witch has said that if they have a child together, that child will be the legitimate heir to the throne, because Maid Marian is King Richard's cousin. So I guess you can sort of see the logic, but while the sheriff is attempting to rape Maid Marian, he's making all of these like one-liners, these sort of like action movie zingers about, hey, it's kind of hard for me to do what I need to do here with all that racket outside. And it's in really poor taste. It's not a great look. And then, you know, when Robin shows up, the sheriff is mad that, you know, he has to fight his nemesis, but also kind of pissed because he didn't get to rape that woman yet.
I just think it's out of character. It would be more like as everyone's banging on the walls and trying to get in, he'd be more screaming like, hey, I'm going to kill each and every last one of you after I'm done with this. But it's more of like, hey, guys, I'm trying to conceive a boy here. Like, it has more of that vibe to it. And it doesn't exactly fit the tone of this climactic ending here. But it's a fun little sword fight. Swash buckling. It's something I always associate with like the fancy fencing across like the top of a castle, or like a pirate would be a swashbuckler, you know.
I picture pirates as swashbucklers.
Yeah, that's the kind of fight we have here. And then the sheriff has Robin pinned to the stained glass window, and the sheriff has the sword to Robin's neck. He could apply a little bit of forward pressure and end it all, but no. He decides to say a line or two, but haha, you forgot about the dagger that Maid Marian carefully gave Robin earlier in the film, but Robin didn't forget about this dagger. And Robin uses the dagger to stab one sheriff of Nottingham.
That's the end of the sheriff, and that basically ends the battle.
Well, also, Friar Tuck killed the evil priest.
Yes, yes, he did. He pushed him out of a window.
He said, you're going to need a lot of money on your trip to hell, and here's your 30 pieces of silver. Do you know why he said that?
Yes, I know my New Testament. I mean, I'm a Jew, but I still know the story of Judas.
Yeah, 30 pieces of silver is what Judas got for betraying Jesus. So the priest basically was a sellout, as you learned, that the priest was basically saying anyone the sheriff wanted. He was basically saying, that guy's a devil worshiper. So his land is now the sheriff's. And, you know, that's not very nice to do.
Right. And now things can go back to normal. So then Robin and Maid Marian are going to get married, because also during all of this, they've fallen in love, which is mainly inspired by the moment when Maid Marian sees Robin Hood's butt because he's like taking a bath in a waterfall. Whatever. And during the wedding, King Richard shows up. And who is King Richard but Sean Connery in an uncredited cameo? You know, he has like 10 seconds worth of screen time or something like that. But it's always nice to see Sean Connery in a movie.
Yeah, and he's a 61-year-old Sean Connery, and he's portraying a 37-year-old King Richard. But nobody knows that, and I didn't know that till I read that on IMDb. So I'm going to call this historically accurate, but, you know, it seems like King Richard should have been 61. So that felt okay.
Well, what didn't feel okay is the way the movie ends. Friar Tuck then says to the camera, well, what are you still doing here? Let's go and have a party, or something like that. He's like, well, let's have a celebration. He winks directly to camera, and then the movie ends. I was like, why? Why did he need to break the fourth wall at the very end of the movie? What good does that serve? It accomplishes nothing.
Yeah, there's a couple parts of this film that make it aware that it is a film. I don't know if you remember the first time that the Sheriff of Nottingham meets Robin of Locksley, and he's like, I'm gonna kill you! And do you remember what Robin looks down at him and says? He goes, so it begins. And then he runs away. Like, and that's the beginning of the film.
I mean, I guess you could sort of explain that away of like, so it begins our fight, because he hadn't seen the sheriff before. He'd only encountered his cousin. I think you could make it stretch that that's not breaking the fourth wall, but I get your point. I mean, it's definitely an awkward thing for someone to say in that situation. I agree with you.
Yeah, but that being said, what do you think of this film? What stands up? What doesn't stand up? And does it stand the test of time?
You know, like I said, I hadn't seen this movie because I thought that it was this sappy romance flick because of the Bryan Adams song. And I was surprised that this is not a sappy romance flick. It is an action movie. And it has a lot of things in action movies that I like. It has these cool action set pieces. It has some interesting effects. They do a couple of shots where the camera is like following the arrow when you watch the arrowhead spin through the air. Those shots are pretty cool. It has some levity in it. There's a couple of jokes throughout the movie. There's a gag early on where Duncan, who is blind, is talking to Azeem, who's a Moor, and he's like, oh, these damn Crusades, I hate the Moors. So anyway, Azeem, is that an Irish name? And Azeem says, no, it's Moorish. And Duncan's like, ooh. And, you know, that's not the height of comedy, but it's kind of cute. It made me smile. There's a couple of quippy one-liners that I like, and, you know, that did make me smile, and I did appreciate. And, you know, there is a plot here. You can sort of pick apart some of the plot holes that exist of like, how do all of these people live in the forest and no one knows where they are? How big is this forest? They can build an entire Ewok village in this forest and nobody hears them? Like, what? There are some things that are strange, but I think it does have a story that you can follow from A to B to C. The whole Will being Robin's half-brother thing, okay, that tracks. You know, they set up that Robin and his father were fighting because of this woman that the father loved after the mom died. So then it does pay off. So there is a lot in this movie that I really do like. The character of Maid Marian, they do her dirty. I mean, it sucks that she starts off in this movie as this kick-ass woman who can hold her own against Robin Hood. And then at the end of the movie, she's just a shrieking damsel in distress who can do nothing but yell and scream. And like, I think at one point she hits the sheriff with like a statue or something during the fight, but she really doesn't contribute. And she should. She should be there fighting back. She's tough. And they kind of drop the ball with her, I think. They also don't do a great job with the love story. And like I say, you know, I do think the gags that take place within the rape scene are weird within the context of this movie. It's not out of character for the sheriff. He's been established as a rapey dude. But just like the sort of winks to the audience, I didn't love, especially considering that the movie is PG-13. It seems really weird. I mentioned something similar in our Uncle Buck episode a couple weeks ago. But overall, I enjoyed this movie. I think it works as an action flick. And I'm going to say that it does stand the test of time. What do you think, James?
I have two questions for you. One, why is this film called Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
Well, does Maid Marian say it when they're talking, like in the forest, or she says something about thieves, like leading a band of thieves. Maybe she doesn't say the words Prince of Thieves. I mean, he's definitely not a prince.
It's not like he's like the prince that you didn't know about and that, oh, he is the true heir. He does have royal blood in him, like Spaceballs or something. You know, no, it's a weird thing. But my second question is that song you keep mentioning, I'm not familiar with it. How does it go again?
Oh, everything I do for you, there's no love like your love. And love, it makes me love.
No, I actually have the lyrics right here. The verse you're talking about, this is the lyrics. There's no love like your love. And no other could give more love. There's nowhere unless you're there all the time, all the way. Yeah.
Aw.
It went on to be the best single of Adam's career. It was number one on the U.S. Billboard charts. Guess how many weeks in a row is number one?
A lot.
14 weeks. This had to have been Song of Summer 1991.
Definitely not my favorite Bryan Adams song, though.
What would be your favorite Bryan Adams? Would that be Summer of 69?
I mean, that's the obvious answer. I really do like Run to You. I think I would go with Run to You.
Hmm. You are a rebel. But I think you bring up a fantastic point about Maid Marian. She's a badass. The actress that plays her is Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. She's a fantastic actress. And when she screams, Robin, I'm just going to play it here. Robin! This is a fantastic scream, but you're right. She's just a shrill screaming woman. She is tough and then she isn't. That is weird. But you know, that being said, I did not see the Russell Crowe version of it. My guess is that that is a much more grittier, dirtier one. And this one is more of a handsome Kevin Costner. Every one of the peasants in the forest, they're either good looking or they're like Hollywood ugly. This is a very pleasant film to watch. It's an easy film. It's not a great film. It really isn't. There's some silly things in here. Like the catapult, the devil-worshipping subplot of this film. The film is also 2.5 hours. It does not need to be 2.5 hours when last week's film told basically the Robin Hood story in 84 minutes. I'm not saying it has to be under an hour and a half, but it didn't need an hour of the film. I thought the Crusades part was really cool, and that to me was one of the more interesting parts of this film. But it's a swashbuckling tale of Robin Hood and medieval England. And I think everyone acts very well. 90s Kevin Costner is top of his game. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio is fantastic. Alan Rickman, he's always amazing. Everyone else is good. The music is very good, actually. And yeah, I'll say it does hold up, does stand the test of time.
Did you, by any chance, when you were doing your research, read about the Kevin Costner, Kevin Reynolds thing? Like, that they were best friends, like they knew each other from the 80s, and then they worked together on this movie and it ended really badly and they hated each other. Then they worked together on Waterworld, which was an even bigger disaster, and they really hated each other after that. But then they made up again and they worked together on that TV show, Hatfields and McCoys. There's like this like fascinating bromance breakup story of these two Kevins that like love each other, then hate each other, but keep finding ways to work their way back together.
You know, I have read about that. I read between the lines of what that feud is. And what that tells me is that I think these two men really dislike each other, but they know that they're both very talented. And I'm not saying Waterworld's a brilliant film or anything, but Hatfield and McCoys did win a bunch of Emmys, I believe. I feel like he probably was like, I don't like this guy. We keep fighting, but he knows his shit. So that's what I get out of it.
We'll review Waterworld at some point, right? I mean, like, we've got to. That's on the list.
Oh, it definitely deserves a revisit. But we're not there yet, because we have one more film to do in our Robin Hood trilogy, which we're doing for no particular reason.
Right. Next week, we will be back with the Mel Brooks spoof, Robin Hood : Men in Tights. This is a movie that I must have seen a million times back in the 90s. I haven't seen it in years. I'm really excited to watch that again. It'll be interesting to see how that holds up. So join us next week for that episode. To make sure you don't miss it, you'll want to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or SoundCloud or Stitcher or whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. And talk to us on social media at Test of Time Pod. Let us know your favorite Robin Hood movie. Let us know your favorite Bryan Adams song. Let us know your favorite Kevin Costner accent. Just kidding. There's only one. It's American. And sometimes American with a tiny little bit of an English accent mixed in. See you next time, everybody.
Bye.